Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 399.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we look to France and say bravo, because despite not actually needing to do this at all, they went ahead and enshrined women's reproductive rights in the Constitution. I am your host, Nagin Farsad. And no big deal, I lived in Paris for a while. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on this show before. Cut to, yes, I mentioned it a million times. But I ride hard for France, and news like this makes it very clear why. Today, we'll turn our attention to a country that doesn't have women's rights enshrined in its constitution. The United States! Though it is also a country for which I ride hard. Nevertheless, we could do better. And in that spirit, we're going to look at the Super Tuesday election results. We're going to look at the latest Supreme Court ruling on Trump. And we're going to talk about a man who sued Powerball. And we'll talk about how gossiping might actually be good for us. I am so excited for today's panel. Joining me today, you've heard him on the show before. You've loved him on the show before. He has a solo show in Boston from April 16th to the 21st at the Robert Studio Theater. It is the one and only Gabe Malika. Gabe Malika, right? Malika?
Nailed it. Nailed it.
Thank you. I always worry and then I get it right. most of the time. Okay. So Gabe Malika, and you should buy tickets for this show on April 16th through the 21st. It's a big theater. It's a wonderful opportunity to see him. The show is fantastic. Everyone says so. You need to go see Gabe in Boston. We are also joined by the wonderful comedian. He has just an incredible resume. You've seen him all over the television screens. He has a stand-up show nearly every week on Zoom. It's interactive. It's pay what you want. It's like, it's super fun. It is the one and only, the iconic Judah Friedlander. Hey, Judah.
Hello. Thank you for having me be able to return on your show. Thank you.
Yes, we love having you on. And before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that if they want to support the show, they can go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. We do just extremely fun bonus episodes of the show for as little as $4 a month, which is, we resisted inflationary pressures changing that price. We stayed fast. At $4 a month, you get two bonus episodes of the podcast. Then there's tiers above. There's a $5 tier, a $10 tier, and you get more and more things. But for literally as little as $4 a month, you get bonus episodes. And we have episodes coming out about with like Ophira Eisenberg and Allison Leiby talking about what to do with a friend who's chronically late. We have an episode coming out about things you should never say to your partner, where we learn that we have said all of those things. There's a lot of really fun bonuses coming out. It's the segments where we really let our hair down. And then the real bonus is the spiritual one, where you have the benefit of knowing that you support Fake the Nation and all that we do here. So go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Now let's get into it with topic number one. So, according to the numbers posted on his screen, John Cheeks had won the Powerball for $340 billion. Okay. So, but when he tried to submit his ticket, this gentleman in D.C., the D.C. Lottery Office said those numbers were posted in error. So Cheeks decided to sue for distress. Now, my question to the two of you is, does he kind of have a point in suing the lottery for posting the wrong numbers?
I feel like it's devastating, right? I feel like what no one's talking about is like, is this guy cool? Like, is this the kind of guy we want to have $200 million? That's how I want to decide. Like, I don't really know the morality of this, but like, is this guy going to spend his $200 million in a fun way? Is he going to buy his friends jet skis or whatever? Or is this somebody that should just not have that kind of power?
Judah, what do you think?
Well, it sounds like they posted numbers, and those were the numbers that he had. And then they said, oh, that was a mistake. Well, it sounds like they were too late. You know, they already posted the numbers. So it sounds like he should sue them twice. He should sue them for the money, for the distress, and then for the distress of the lawsuit. So it should be three lawsuits.
Three lawsuits. You want him to go triple down on these lawsuits. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I honestly, like, as someone who has been in this in the business of show for very many years, there are, and you guys both know this, right? You'll get calls from your agents and managers and stuff where they'll be like, Nagin, you're pinned for something. You're so close. This is going to be yours, Nagin. This thing is your thing. Barring any unreasonable thing that might happen, this is going to be yours. And then inevitably you get the call and they're like, they decided to go in another direction. The number of times I should have sued for distress, that is enough distress. Just these jobs I thought I was going to get that I didn't get, that is so much distress. Never mind the distress of several hundred million dollars. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is, it's heart shattering. And I think now my little recommendation to the DC lottery office, and I know that they care very much what I think. So here's what I think is that they should, and I think maybe John Cheeks would even find this a reasonable suggestion. Let's just split it. It was $340 million. Let's just split that in between the accidental number and the real number and the real winner.
The King Solomon approach. Just split the baby.
Because I've run the numbers, half of that amount, and this is, I don't know if you guys have figured this out yet, is still a fuckload of cash. And so I think you could still be really happy with just half of those winnings.
Can we also just talk about...
I take 10 grand.
No, go ahead, Gabe. Go ahead, Gabe. Sorry.
No, I'll take 10 grand. 10 grand sounds great. Why don't they just give me some money while they're at it?
Gabe, you need to aim higher. Okay. If we're talking about lawsuits and John Cheeks and the DC lottery office, we are aiming higher. Judah, you're going to say?
Can we talk about how great his name is, John Cheeks? I mean, this is a great name.
I agree. The name alone deserves the amount.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a lottery winner to me. It sounds like this person won the lottery. His name is John Cheeks. You're already a winner with a name like that. You're going to win the lottery at some point. It's just, I think that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's inevitable. Absolutely. And you know what? And he did. Also, I think that they should have a policy in place because human error is what it is, and making the error public, like, they should have a policy in place. Like, if we make a mistake, then we are going to have to, like, pay for it through some of the winnings. So, like, and make the policy known if the winning number and the incorrectly posted number appear the same, you know, in the same round, we are going to pay out both of them half, you know, whatever it is. Like, and by the way, there is precedent for this. Apparently this happened in Iowa in November, just recently, where the lottery contractors posted the wrong numbers. They cited human reporting error. And in that instance, the ticket holders with the wrong numbers actually were able to cash in on prizes. Now, this is the difference, ranging from $4 to $200, more like Gabe's range of money that he would be asking for. So there is precedent for literally what we're talking about in case law. So it's not even crazy.
I will say, when this happened to me when I was in fourth grade and they told me I made the travel soccer team and then I didn't actually make the travel soccer team, I should have sued for $200 million because it felt bad, Nagin. It didn't feel good at all.
I mean, I see in your eyes that you're still recovering from it. Like, this is
some things you don't forget.
No,
this is my next solo show. I don't let go.
Yeah, maybe you can classify that as some type of, you know, child discrimination and... You know, because you're not even an adult who can handle these kind of things. So
child.
It's true. That's a fourth lawsuit.
Yeah.
And I think you should rope John Cheeks into this lawsuit somehow, because that guy.
Class action.
Yeah, there it is. That guy's a winner. All right. Let us move on to another topic in culture, which is that the Chapman University puts out an annual Chapman Survey of Fears. And we took a look at the Survey of Fears to find out what are Americans scared of these days. Now, before I get into what they're actually scared of, is there something you would have imagined would be on this list?
I actually thought the list was pretty good, right?
Like, it matched your expectations.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. It was like political corruption, people in your life dying. I was like, that's like, it honestly like boils, like a lot of art is based on these anxieties. So I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense to me.
It's a pretty scary world. I agree.
Well, some of the fears. Okay, so the number one fear, and I'm curious where this ranks for you guys personally, is that is the fear of government corruption, which actually for me is not really number one. I mean, I think like large-scale climate change disasters, I think maybe rank higher or something, and they weren't like specifically on the list. But the interesting thing about government corruption is that it was a bipartisan fear, because both progressives and conservatives are afraid of government corruption, and but they're afraid of it from different angles, but they're both afraid of it. So I thought that was really interesting. Judah, did you find it surprising that government, I can't say corruption, the government corruption made the top of the list?
You see, the government is secretly preventing you from pronouncing the phrase government corruption, which is showing you how deep this problem is.
Yeah.
I agree.
The deep state is in my mouth.
I will say that ultimately that is government corruption.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it all falls under government. You know, they always try to blame, oh, it's the individual, you know, just, you know, drink less straws and you'll save it. It's like, our military is doing more polluting than half the world. You know, I looked at the article and there's a picture, I guess, of the guy who wrote this, or who this professor. And I was scared just looking at that photo, because this guy is. I was actually afraid to read the article. It was like,
I mean,
another thing I'm afraid of is entering passwords to a website. So and you had to do that to read this article. So that was. That was scary, too.
Terrifying.
The thing that actually. That I wake up with a small fear of this every single day is like asking, is entering a password into a website, and then they're like, your password is wrong, reset your password. I wake up every day with a low-grade fear of having to reset multiple passwords. Like, it makes me crazy. There's something like just a general feeling of abject failure every time I have to reset a password. Like, what have I done as a person that I can't fucking keep these things, keep track of these things? I cannot do it.
Yeah, and then you talk to a real tech person and they're like, you should change it every 30 seconds. And you're like, that's too many times.
I die. So let me tell you guys the full top 10 list here and just get your thoughts. See if any of these you share them or they're of interest to you. The rest of them are economic or financial collapse. Russia using nuclear weapons wasn't on my personal list, so I was interested to see that there. United States becoming involved in another world war. People I love becoming seriously ill. People I love dying. Pollution from drinking water, specifically. Biological warfare. Cyber terrorism. And not having enough money in the future. It rounds out the list of the top 10 things that people are really afraid of. Did any of those track with you guys?
Well, they're all political, right? I mean, they're all like the government doesn't take care of us in the way that it should. It's funny to hear like what I feel like what other people are worried about is always funny to me. Like my parents have a Chihuahua and I'll walk the dog sometimes and people will be like, aren't you worried that dog's going to get bitten by a hawk? And I'm like, what? Like, I'm worried about the end of the world. Like, I don't, like, what are you talking about? And they think I'm crazy. They're like, climate change. This guy's a lunatic, you know? So the top 10, like, yeah, I mean, it's all money and politics. I feel like I'm a conspiracy theorist, but all the conspiracies are like right in front of us where it's like, oh yeah, you can just give as much money to any candidate to do whatever you want. Dark money. Like, so it's like people have these elaborate conspiracies and I'm like, oh no, like it's just Occam's razor. It's all just like, we know where the money's coming from and we know who's giving it.
There was one thing, the last thing I wanted to ask about this, that the guy that Judah Friedlander is afraid of, Christopher Bader, the professor of sociology
his
at
photograph,
Harvard University,
not him personally, just his photograph.
His photograph.
He's Mindy Tucker.
It was a bit much. Yeah, like it was a bit much, his photograph. But and not to say that he's not a handsome man, for the record. Okay. He talks about there was a Q&A with him and the person asked, like, you know, that he said that in the past it's not fashionable or welcome to talk about the positive things or how good things are. Because, you know, if you look at where the world stands now, in absolute terms, we're all doing 5,000 times better than we were 100 years ago, 10,000 years ago, whatever. We're obviously doing better. But why is it so difficult to ever say that anything's going well? And he basically points out that, you know, if you do say that things are good, you somehow are suggesting that nothing needs to change, that we have a hard time grappling with nuance, right? And relativity. Judah, do you have a hard time, like, do you think that's true, that we as a people have a hard time, like, saying that things are good? Because
I don't think I agree with him on that one. I think, okay, I'm gonna disagree with the professor on that one. Yeah, no, I think people have a right to be, you know, disturbed and upset and afraid with everything that's going on. And I mean, I think our government is one of the most terrifying governments on the planet, hands down. You know, we're the only country to ever nuke another country, and we did it twice. So other countries haven't done it. We've done it. You know, look, I mean, I think we're funding a genocide right now, you know, and our government just, you know, they censured Rashida Tlaib for speaking out against what many people of the world, probably the majority of the people of the world, consider a genocide. And so I think there's a lot of very dangerous things going on. And I think it is very dangerous time. So I think speaking out against it is good. Now, getting a break from that and enjoying things for survival, yeah, escapism, that stuff is necessary too. But I don't know, it almost feels like gaslighting what he's saying when people aren't looking at it with nuanced. I think a lot of the people with fear are seeing things nuanced. I think there are people also who aren't. I think there are people who aren't, who, you know,
know, in support of his position, like, for example, we'll probably get into this in the next segment, but, like, you know, like there's a lot of things that people can be negative on about Biden, but, like, for example, we spend almost no time talking about the absolutely monumental climate change bill that he managed to get through, right? Like, so there's like great things that he's done, but, like, we only look at the negative things. And I think, to me, that's kind of like what this sociologist is pointing out, is that, like, we talk about the negative almost at the expense of even recognizing that anything good has ever happened. You know what I mean? And I take issue with that, because I do want to live a happier life. You know what I mean? Personally. So I don't know. All right, folks, let me know. What do you think? Do you feel like we can't handle the nuance of positive versus negative stuff? What are your fears? Do your 10 fears correlate with this list? Do you have some new ones to add? I'm so curious to hear. Let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsors, and when we get back, we'll continue our chatter. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. First off, the Supreme Court ruled on Monday that states can't bar Trump from appearing on the primary ballot. This was basically the expected outcome because, you know, if states could do that, then when would we would have a totally chaotic electoral system in which some states would exert power over the union by taking, you know, people off ballots. It just would be kind of pandemonium. So we kind of expected this. It was a 9-0 vote. That said, Gabe, what did you think of this outcome?
I feel like it was like a real case of like Democrat brain that we thought we could take Trump down with like a technicality or like an interpretation of a law. I think the only way to beat him is like you run on politics that make everyone's lives better, where it's like I'm just like begging a candidate, I'm like, please, someone who's like gonna make all of our lives better. I feel like that's how you beat Trump, where it's like, you know, I like Trump, but this other person's making my life so much better. How could I ignore this person? And it felt like very like a Hall Monitor vibes, where it's like, well, technically, the, you know, because of the insurrection, it's like, that's a long shot. Like, I feel like we're just like focusing. So like when it got shot down 9-0, like it didn't surprise me.
I think Gabe made a good point there. You know, I don't know enough about the, you know, I can see if it was reversed, where the Republicans would be screaming states' rights, which they often like to do for certain issues that fit them. You don't see the Democrat Party doing that. But yeah, I think what Gabe said is, you know, when it comes to elections, you have to, give people something to vote for. And I think that's if the Democrats want to win the next election, I think they have a big problem there, because I don't think there's many people. I think both candidates, the majority of the people don't want either one of these candidates.
Yes.
In the country.
The numbers basically bear that out. Yeah. The phenomenon is called also called double haters, where they have like a very large proportion of people that hate both candidates. And yeah, so that the numbers do bear that out. Let's actually look at the Super Tuesday results. Trump won all but one state. Nikki Haley won Vermont. This morning, she basically dropped out of the race. She has not endorsed him, but has suggested that he has to work harder in order to win over her voters. So Trump is essentially the nominee. I guess in a week we'll have the actual, he'll have the actual delegate count. He doesn't quite have that yet because of that Vermont loss. He also lost in DC over the weekend. Haley won that race. So I don't know, Gabe, obviously, and Biden also won. There were some protest voting going on in places like Minnesota that did cut into, I mean, you know, he won by like 80 something percent in all of these races, but like the protest vote did cut into it being an even larger number. Gabe, what did you think of these results? I mean, it's sort of all expected. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Totally. The one that shook me, which I guess was from last week, was in Michigan. So many people voting for that third option, which is like non-committal. I don't remember the exact phrasing.
Uncommitted.
Uncommitted. Thank you, Judah. And that shook me a little bit. And like expected, right? There's a huge Muslim population in Michigan. And, you know, when you're funding like an illegal war, it's going to be tough to curry favor and get those votes. And God, you never want to be losing to the idea of nothingness. It's like people voting for purgatory in this like odd way. That really jumped out at me. I mean, I heard somebody in a coffee shop today in Cleveland be like, Nikki Haley dropped out. And I was like, of course, you know, like she doesn't have anything to offer either. She was just like doing Trump coattail stuff anyway.
I think Nikki Haley should have done what Trump did and just deny that she lost any of these state elections. I don't know why anyone's not just doing what Trump did. It's just like, tell everyone it was fixed. Say this guy's a loser. He lost the presidential election. He lost these. I won these.
The only one I didn't win is Vermont.
And just do that. You know, I don't know why is he the only one doing this?
Well, Judah, I don't know if you've ever run for president, but I've certainly seen you campaign for president. Is there anything you can enlighten us?
I've stood for president. I don't run. I stand. Yeah, I stand. Yes. Correct, Gabe. Correct. Yeah. But no, I think it's, Yeah, I forget the topic. Sorry. No,
I also want to say that that protest vote for uncommitted in Minnesota this time around was at 20%. So it was like it was even higher than it was in Michigan. A couple of things like to take away from these elections that I will say about Trump, which is that Nikki Haley did have the kind of suburban voters, those like ladies who have a beating heart within the Republican Party. Like she kind of had that market cornered, and that's a weakness for Trump. She was leading among moderate voters by nearly 2-1. The only problem is moderate voters only make up 20% of the GOP primary voters. The rest of the primary voters are pretty MAGA-ish. Roughly 1 in 4 Republican primary voters in North Carolina voted for Nikki Haley. North Carolina is a tough state for Trump to begin with. So these are all like, you know, interesting weaknesses for Trump. Also, I want to point out that Adam Schiff and Steve Harvey will be running for the senatorial race in California. That was a weird one because Steve Harvey is running as a Republican and Adam Schiff ended up spending something like $11 million to kind of prop up the Steve Harvey campaign on conservative media by running what seemed like attack ads, but were also just like, hey, this guy is running and he's a Republican ads. And Schiff's like strategy there was so that he wouldn't be running in a protracted race against another Democrat, which would have been Katie Porter. So it is now going to be, instead of that, it'll be Adam Schiff versus Steve Harvey, a guy who once played baseball.
Yeah, I think I don't like what Schiff did there at all. I think that was
shady.
You know, as Katie Porter and Barbara Lee criticized him, I believe they both did. And I think it actually reminds me of when it was Clinton versus Trump in 2016, and they made a decision to prop up Trump because they thought he was going to be the easiest to beat. And Schiff is spending this money to prop up Garvey. And you know, and if he didn't do that, it's possible that he would not have come in second. He may still have, but he may not have come in second. And I think in the general, Garvey's got a good chance at beating him. I think it was a selfish move. I mean, I'm not in the Democratic Party. I'm way to the left of the Democratic Party. But I just think strategically it's like if I lived in California, I would vote for Barbara Lee or Katie Porter way over Adam Schiff. But I think they're giving themselves a much better chance at the Democrat Party losing a Senate seat. That's what I think.
I think Schiff's calculation is that like this is obviously going to go to a Democrat. Just the numbers bear that out, but you're right.
But the polls right now are pretty close. The polls now are close. It's 35. I think it's like a 5% difference between the Garvey and Schiff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
California's weird too, right? They've California's had Republican weird. Governors and stuff.
Reagan. Yeah. Reagan.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Totally.
They booted an elected Democrat. Gray and they put Republican Schwarzenegger in there. Yeah. That wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
So. All right.
It's also
and
like Garvey.
More than half the country is not registered in either party. That's the other thing. So you know, I think rightfully so, people are pissed at both parties. I'm not equating both main parties, but I think people are rightfully pissed at both parties.
Yeah. Also, Steve Garvey just sounds way too much like Steve Harvey, who would be a pretty fun member of the U.S. Senate. the gaffes in the suits.
Wait, I think I've said the wrong name.
You said Steve Harvey.
Did I say? Oh my god! Oh my god! Because my mind can't contain both of those people. That's what's happening.
Yeah. You see. Everyone's already talking about Steve Garvey. Yeah. They're not talking about the Democrat.
And he hosted a beauty pageant, I think Miss Universe. So just like Trump,
yeah,
he could be our next beauty pageant.
And he was a good baseball player. Let's not.
yeah, that
his, look how, this country like, has elected a lot of good.
How famous of a baseball player was this guy that is not
super famous? Famous.
Okay, okay. All right. To me, because to me, I
like
was just 70s
like 70s and 80s. Oh, okay, gotcha. 70s and 80s.
Okay, because I was like, this is a random man I've never heard of before in my life.
Yeah. No. No. He was. Super well known, super popular.
His
and good. Yeah,
his like you know his little victory speech was in adjacent to my hometown. I grew up in Palm Springs, and he I guess lives in Palm Desert. So, which was Palm Desert High School and Palm Springs High School were arch rivals. So I'm not trying to throw any love on Palm Desert. Just so we all know, okay?
Wasn't Clint Eastwood? a Republican, also mayor of either Palm Springs or Carmel, California.
Carmel, because California. Our famous mayor was Sonny Bono. Thank you very much. Yes, that's right. Also a Republican. Yes. And then when he went...
Celebrity politicians.
And when
huge.
He went to Congress, he became a best buds with a Monsieur Newt Gingrich. So that is the Sonny Bono legacy. For the people of Southern California, for the district that he represented in Southern California.
Sunny and Scare.
All right, folks, let me know, what did you think of these primary results? You know, it's a strange feeling right now, because exactly at this moment in 2020, everybody was following the elections with a crazy fever pitch. Obviously, we were all, you know... I guess we were in lockdown. We were just starting lockdown at that time. So it was a different time. But I feel like nobody is following these elections really. And I don't know what to say about that. Like, I don't know. And I part of me feels good about that, because I don't want people to be overly riled up. It doesn't help for us to just be doing horse race coverage after horse race coverage and getting so stressed out about it. That doesn't really help. But it also doesn't help to not have a general understanding of what's going on and be generally, because we also forget about all the down ballot races that could use our help as volunteers, as advocates. And so I don't know. It's just a weird time. Am I the only one feeling how weird this all feels?
I think you're correct. I think this is the least, for lack of a better term, democratic election, presidential election so far that this country's ever had that I can remember, in the sense that it looks like the two main party candidates are going to be Biden and Trump. Neither one of them so far has participated in a primary debate, and it looks like there's probably not going to be a general election debate. So this is the first time there's just, you know, two people who are anointed, and those are your choices. Yeah. And
to be fair, there's an actual primary process. They're not even anointed. They're being voted for. Like, that's the other crazy thing.
Right, right. But
there's
choices. People aren't even given the platform to see them amongst the other
candidates.
Right,
no, that's definitely
wild. And that's, I don't remember that ever happening before.
Yeah,
where there's no debates.
Yeah, basically. I'm curious. People of Fake the Nation, the smarty pants is out there. Were there cases where candidates just didn't debate and... we just didn't see debates? I would love to know that historical question. And it is a very weird and wild feeling. Nevertheless, people of Fake Nation, the elections matter. And I hope that you're at least somewhat enthusiastically going to be voting if you're not enthusiastic about the entire process leading up. All right, let us move on to topic number three. So new research by the University of Maryland and Stanford has found that gossipers might actually be good for us, which is great news, breathing new life into brunch tables everywhere. But according to the findings, the study revealed that gossip is good, quote, good at disseminating information about people's reputations, which can help recipients of these tips connect with cooperative people while avoiding selfish ones. Basically, it helps you figure out your network of people that best suit you. Gabe, what did you think of this finding? I mean, what do you think of gossipers to begin with? Are you surprised that they could have a positive impact on your life?
Yeah, I mean, my official stance, I guess, is that gossip is great when I'm doing it. And when people are doing it about me, I guess I feel slightly different. But I like to engage in it for sure. I think also gossip like is sort of a gateway to, like you mentioned, kind of like exposing bad people, you know, like pre sort of like Me Too movement, a lot of like the stuff we knew about bad actors was gossip and jokes. And that stuff eventually trickled out into a type of a movement.
Yeah.
It can also go the other way, right? Like something gets said about somebody that's not true and there's no official way to refute it. But in general, I think people getting together and being like, hey, avoid this person. They're not great. Like it feels like, oh, we shouldn't gossip, but also it can keep people safe, which I, you know, obviously like.
Yeah, I think it depends on the context. I agree with what you said, Gabe. I mean, it can also probably be used to, you know, to punch down on people. You know, I can see in school, you know, the outcast, and then everyone just does gossiping, whether it's truthful or false, and then makes that person's life now they get ganged up on in a completely unfair and abusive way. So I just think this article should not have come out on like a major university or a major, you know, it should have come out in the gossip columns first. You know, this should have been page six.
It should have been page six. Yeah. Page six of Otter. Well, one of the things that I found wild about these findings too, is that people spend, and I did not know this, spend an hour a day on average talking about other people. Like people basically spend an hour a day on gossip. Which it's funny because before we started taping, Andrew and I, our beloved producer, were heavily gossiping about we were doing celebrity gossip, which is kind of like we have no impact on celebrities' lives. So it was like fun and stupid. But I was like, as we were talking, I was like, I wonder how much time we're spending talking, like gossiping about these celebrities. Oh, my God, I'm going to meet my hour a day quota today. Definitely. Just from this conversation. So do you feel like that tracks in your life that you spend that much time in gossip?
Yeah, I think it's healthy. I think in some ways, like that is a service that celebrities give us where it's like, everyone projects onto them. Like my aunt who's on Facebook, you know, like it really gives her a big outlet to be like, I like Miley. I don't like this person.
Right.
And in some ways that's healthier than like doing it about like who you work with. Yeah, I get it. I think it's fine.
It's probably healthy. I don't do any gossiping, so I should probably start doing some more and get healthier.
Well, so. One of the other weird things was that the researchers have found that if you find yourself in front of a gossiper, you're more likely to like be on your best behavior in front of them because you want the information then that gets out about you to be positive information, right?
So it's fascism. Gossip is fascism. And fascism is good for you, is what we're saying. Fascism is good.
Fascism is good. Yeah, that's what we're saying. But basically, that if you and that you yourself will provide some gossip to the gossiper, because you want to stay in their good graces. So basically, you're rewarded by the gossiper by providing gossip, and then you yourself end up like adjusting your behavior because you're in front of a gossiper. I wonder if you know when you're talking to a gossiper that they're a gossiper. Like I almost feel like I don't know who's going to go talk say things about me after I'm around them. I feel like it could literally be anyone. I'm not like that acutely aware about who's a gossiper and who isn't in my circles.
I feel the same way. I'm socially dumb. So I'm definitely not good at that stuff.
Gabe, are you aware? Like, do you feel yourself adjusting around certain people?
Yeah, you know, you get into a conversation sometimes and you're talking about someone else and I always feel like, oh, is this how this person talks about me when I'm not here?
Yeah.
You know, like that feeling is really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even just like the way my mother will is like, my sister didn't have a job like 4 years ago for 2 weeks. And my mom was like, still talking about it. And I just like quit my job to do comedy. I'm like, God, what's she saying about me?
That's a lot of pressure. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That is.
You should open your show with that. Wow.
That's the next one, Judah.
Just get the sympathy from the crowd immediately. Wow. Wow, that is harsh. Woo.
But it is, I mean, one way that I, because I feel like my mom's a bit of a gossip, and I feel like one way over the years I've seen her sort of use gossiping is like, almost like a parenting technique when I was little or whatever, was to just be like, you know, I heard so-and-so's daughter, like, you know, didn't do well on their homework. Look at you. Mm. You are doing well. It was almost a way of like praising me, shitting on someone else. You know what I mean? And like, or praising someone else to shit on me in a certain way to get me to do better, like by example. And so I feel like she kind of used it a lot in that way. But it turns, according to the researchers, people are constantly adjusting their understanding of good and bad behavior based on these stories that gossipers are sharing. So you might in a bubble hear a story about fucking Laura Dern behaving in a certain way or whoever, right? And then you may think something about it, but if a gossiper is delivering that story, they put some stank on it, some spin on it, and then you are like, oh, I guess she was a bitch in that moment or whatever. I'm just using Laura Dern as, I don't know anything about her. But you know what I mean? Like that's another thing that happens, is that we sort of like collectively figure out what good and bad behavior is.
Yeah, I think comedy helps you kind of redefine like your own stories in a fun way. Mm-hmm. Where like I've definitely told stories on stage before that like people gossiped about me about. And there's something really empowering about being like, no, here's it from my perspective. Here's this 10-minute chunk or the solo show or whatever. And I'm sure, Judah, I'm sure in your own sort of like mythology building of your own self, I'm sure you've done that too, right? Where like you're in control now of how people see you.
I mean, when you're performing, you mean?
Yeah. You get like ownership over the way people see you.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't know if I ever looked at it that way, but yeah.
In some ways, Judah, yeah. You are, stand-up comedians are but gossipers on a public stage.
I mean, there's all different kinds, you know. Stand-up is such a, it really is, you know, it's kind of a narrow definition, but it's also a very expansive definition at the same time. There's so many different, you know, styles of and you know, genres within stand-up comedy. So I think some definitely fall into that, but I think there's a lot that don't.
Yeah, for sure. Folks, where do you stand on this? By the way, the research found that in like many cases, because of the nature of the reward structure of gossiping, the gossipee becomes the gossiper. So none of us are without our own gossipy faults. And the research suggests that like this is not negative. It has helped us build networks that are beneficial to us. So we should stop like thinking of gossip as having a negative connotation, which
no guilt.
No guilt. Just go
no shame. That's how you become
guys,
president.
Go talk shit. Go talk shit as far as your heart desires. The good people at Stanford University and the University of Maryland think it's just fine.
Oh wow, what a cool dog. Wow.
See, oh, that's a good dog.
Oh, now that I brought him up, now he's like, oh my god.
Just pure joy.
Are you guys catching this noise here? Okay. Oh my gosh.
This is just good audio.
He has a hairball. Are you done?
I love dogs.
Are you done?
The best.
Do you have a dog?
No, I don't.
Okay.
You should.
He's the best. And I would now listen, that folks. Are you done, Patrick? John Hodgman told me that whenever he included his dog, he got more views or whatever. So anyway, so I'm trying to include the dog, except for he was having a little moment. Folks, that is the end of the show. And what I would like is for you to be able to tell listeners where they can find you and all the wonderful things that you do. Judah Freelander, where do they do that?
Let's see. Well, I do live stream stand-up shows. They're about 2 hours each. I do them about once a week. They're Pay What You Want. It's on Zoom. You can go to my social media or my website to find out about that. You can probably see me at pro-Palestine rallies. You can see me probably March 15th at the long COVID rally in D.C. at the Lincoln Memorial. And yeah, I'll be hitting some. And actually, Nagin got me a gig. You got me a gig. I got to thank you.
You're doing that gig.
At this movie theater in Westchester. I think it's called the Jacob Burns Film Center. I think it's April 15th. I'm showing the movie They Live, the John Carpenter movie They Live. And
oh my gosh, I'm so excited that worked out.
Yeah, you got me that gig, so I got to plug that gig. I think it's April 15th in Westchester at the John Burns Film Center. It's like a comedy slash movie type night.
Film Center. Yes, yeah. You're going to be so Jude will be doing some stand up followed by a screening of a film that he selected.
Yeah.
I too am doing this Jacob Burns Film Center. I'm doing it. I think it's on the 29th of April, and I think I'm not sure if it's been announced yet, but I think I'm going to be doing the movie Punchline with Tom Hanks, which is hilarious and weird and like a movie I revisited as a comedian. I think the first time I had seen it was like on a DVD and not understanding it. And I was too young to even know what I was looking at. Now I'm looking at it with a completely different view because I'm a stand-up comedian. So anyways, that's so funny, Judah. I'm so glad that worked out. So you can see both Judah and me at the Jacob Burns Center a couple of weeks apart. Come out. It's going to be a really good time. And definitely follow him. And then also, if you're out marching, look for Judah. Gabe, where do people find you?
At Gabe Malika on all the socials. My solo show, Solo, show about friendship, is playing in Boston and Minneapolis and Denver. And I'm co-headlining the Den Theater in Chicago with all new material. And GabeMalika.com, I have an email list. I'll come to your city and tell you jokes and stories.
Folks, you know where to find me. I will be walking this dog that I'm now sitting with throughout the streets of New York City. That's what me and him do. We do that a lot. So you can find me picking up poop or like quietly waiting during a pee. That's an everyday. You can also see me, like I said, at the Jacob Burns Center. I'm going to be doing a little event at TED. If anyone's going to be in Vancouver for the TED conference in April, I'll be there. I have some Don't Tell Me dates coming up. Would love it if you came out to those. Live tapings of Wait, Wait are so fun. What I would love to do, though, is thank everyone who makes this show a possibility. That's our wonderful, wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire, who's also an expert giver and taker of gossip.
Nice.
I also want to thank everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. And if you have any questions or concerns, thoughts, anything at all, you can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Sometimes it takes me a minute to get to those emails, but I try to get to all of them. What's the other thing that we say? Oh, yeah, Patreon and review the show. Tell your friends. Next week, I believe, is our 400th episode. So if you ever had a time where you wanted to support the show, now's the time. We've been going for 400 episodes. We would love for more and more people to enjoy the show the way you are. So please tell your friends, rate and review the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, and join the Patreon at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And otherwise, we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.